Welcome to A Book A Day podcast. This is your host Deepak Rana, and this week we are discussing Vandana R. Singh's book, The Bhagavad Gita, A Life-Changing Conversation. The book draws a number of valuable lessons from the Bhagavad Gita, which are insightful but at the same time practical for the contemporary readers such as you and I. In the first part of this series, I'm doing a three-part series. In the first part, we discussed Karma Yoga, which means how we can attain liberation through our actions. And underlying that is really a simple philosophy of finding spirituality in our everyday actions. This part was discussed in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Now from 7th chapter to the 12th chapter, we find Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion. And I'm sure this is not really an unfamiliar territory for most of you who are interested in spirituality, because if you see around, especially in religions, this is the most treaded path when it comes to pursuing spirituality. It's about devotion, devotion to the divine, to the supreme good. And this is really what happens in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. So what lessons can we draw from that, and how we can pursue this path? All of that we'll be discussing in this episode. So let's start with devotion itself. I think if you think about it, this particular action or idea, that of devotion, is another kind of action, right? It's not just anything other than karma or action. It's a particular kind of karma, particular kind of action, where you are devoted to the Supreme God or any other God for that matter. It does not have to be one Supreme God. But if we go by Gita's terminology, we'll find that the idea of the Supreme God is very much there. And one important point to note here is that in this case, the idea of Supreme God is not coming from dualism, it's coming from non-dualism. That means the Krishna, the creator and destroyer of all things, all the universe, that is the ultimate divine power. He is the origin of the entire creation, and it is into him that everything ultimately dissolves. He is present everywhere in nature, in all that you see around, in you and me, everything. He rules them all the things. So this kind of manifestation where the creator is not really different from its creation, that's what we call non-dualism. And that's what we find here in these chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. I make this point because generally speaking, devotion can be of any kind. But if we want to get into the specifics of it, there's a certain level of difference when it comes to devotion to the Supreme Being in non-dualism and dualism. In dualism, you see a clear distinction between the creator and creation. You are the creation, and creator is somewhere at a superior level, and you bow down to the God and you worship the God accordingly. In non-dualism, however, you are a part of it. You are a part of the cosmos. You are a part of the creation, the creator. The creator resides within you. So it's not really that you're different or any way inferior than the creator, but it's just that you are a part of it. And although there is a certain level of devotion, there is a surrender to the divine here, but you can clearly see that difference in the two ideas. And the other reason that I highlight this fact is because Krishna himself spends a lot of time explaining who he is as the Supreme Being. For example, in one of the verses he says, "Everything rests upon me as beads strung on a thread." That's a really interesting comparison. So what he is trying to say here is he is the thread that is running through everything and everything. So we are the beads in that thread. We have a certain degree of freedom, but not really moving beyond that thread. So the nature itself, it operates in a certain way. It follows the laws of physics, laws of nature, universe. But those laws themselves, they are a part of the divinity. And then we, as we all know, that he shows the infinite nature of his form to Arjuna, and then goes on to say some of the famous, most famous verses in the Gita that you also find in the quotations, such as by the Oppenheimer. So I will recite a couple of them. One in the chapter 9 says, "I am the goal of all living beings, and I am also their sustainer, master, witness, abode, shelter, and friend. I am the origin, end, and resting place of creation. I am the storehouse and eternal seed. I radiate heat as the sun, and I withhold as well as send forth rain. I am immortality, and I am death personified. O Arjuna, I am the spirit, and I am matter." So that last line really tells you about the non-duality, that the underlying thing between spirit and matter is the divinity of Krishna. So this idea of non-dualism is not asking you to worship or be devoted to Krishna, that because he's some way a superior being and you need to do that as a moral duty. No, but it's just understanding the creation itself, what it is, how it functions, and then just surrendering to its beauty, its power, its strength, its infinite nature. And also what kind of devotion, as long as we are on that subject, one of the verses in the same chapter, chapter 9, really spells it out. It says that if one offers to me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or even water, with love and pure devotion, I will accept it. So he's just talking about simple acts of devotion. It's the intention that matters. It's how sincerely you are devoted. You're not just doing it for any selfish reasons. You're just surrendering to the sheer beauty and vastness of the universe. And that's really about it. And I think chapter 12, one of the shortest chapters of the Gita, is really significant in that sense. It tells us about the power of love and devotion. And that's what Vandana Singh explains when she comments on this chapter. That how sincerely we are devoted. And we may come from different cultures, we may have different forms of worship, but the fact that we are sincerely devoted with love and affection, that's really crucial. And then I think one of the most interesting theological points also comes in this chapter, where Arjuna asks Krishna about what kind of devotees God prefers, or what's probably a better path to seek God. Because some people devote themselves to an invisible God, whereas there are some who find God's manifestations, physical manifestations, and then they worship that. And that's really, really an interesting question in theology. So in this chapter, Krishna recognizes the challenge. He understands that worshipping the unmanifested form can be a challenge for the devotees, and therefore focusing on this human or personal form of God, that path of devotion is probably easier to sustain in this world. But that doesn't mean that he's discriminating between the two kind of followers, two kind of devotees. It's just the practical aspect of it. The physical manifestation will eventually take the devotee to the supreme power, which is not really the physical, only the physical manifestation of it. It goes much beyond that. But in order to get there, you need something. You need some kind of thread to hold on to, and then you get there eventually. So that's the point he's making here. But as I said, he's not discriminating. And what he's essentially asking here, to worship or devote your attention to the God without distraction and with just single-pointed focus. That's the kind of meditation we are talking about here. And then towards the end of this chapter, there are three verses which I would narrate now, that really talk about how to worship the God. So let me recite those verses. Fix your mind on me alone and surrender your intellect to me. Without doubt, this way you'll always live in me. O Arjuna, the conqueror of wealth, if you are unable to steadily fix your mind on me, then constantly practice restraining the mind from worldly affairs. This way you will develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice remembering me with devotion, then just try to work for me. Thus, performing devotional service to me, you shall achieve perfection. And I think that's a really valuable lesson in the pursuit of spirituality through theistic means. That's exactly how you pursue this path if you're having troubles following your religion or practice spirituality. That's exactly the way to go. What he's asking you to do as a worshipper, as a believer, as a devotee, is to meditate upon the Supreme Being, upon the God. And he's asking you to just single-pointedly concentrate on that. And if you are unable to do so, which happens with all of us all the time, then just try to separate your thoughts from the worldly affairs. Just let your thoughts drift away and bring your concentration on God. And of course, this will take time, but you should pursue this. And even if that remains a challenge, what he's suggesting you to do is to perform devotional services. And that's where religions as institutions really help, because you have plenty of opportunities there to perform devotional services. You get occupied in certain rituals, certain practices, so that what happens is your mind is not really drifting or getting distracted by these countless thoughts, because of the information overload, because of our own anxieties. So that's really a good way to go. You engage in these simple acts of devotion, and that really calms your mind. And if all these things remain challenge for you, you can simply do this task, especially if you are a believer, you're a religious person, that whatever action you do, whatever thing that you're pursuing, whatever tasks you're doing, just on all those activities, just remind yourself that you're dedicating them to God. And then any job you're performing with that intention, you're dedicating it to God, that becomes a devotional service. That becomes a spiritual activity. So as I said in the beginning, I don't see karma yoga very different from bhakti yoga. What we are doing in bhakti yoga is we are bringing the act of dedication, devotion, sincerity, love, all these things in our actions. And we are directing our mind to the Supreme Being, to the God. And because of which, once again, just like karma yoga, everything that we do then becomes an act of spirituality. It gives you a feeling of liberation. And it's really, really therapeutic to the mind. So far, what we have done is we have covered these two paths to attain certain levels of spiritual progress. In one way, which we discussed today, we take the path of what traditional religions subscribe to, which is the path of devotion or worship to God. And in the previous episode, we had only focused on the things that we are doing, the actions that we are performing, and bringing elements of spirituality into those actions without getting into religion. So today's episode would be more suited to traditionally religious people. The first approach might be more helpful to those who are not really spiritual, religious. But then these are two aspects that we have discussed. These are two paths. And there is a third path. The third path is Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge. And that's really an interesting way to pursue our spiritual goals. And that we'll discuss in the next part of this series. So stay with me. And together we'll get to the concluding chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Once again, special thanks to Vandana R. Singh for her wonderful book and the kind of work that she has put in. And I'm quite sure this book is going to help a lot of readers out there. And with that, I take your leave and I'll catch you the next time. Thank you.